you've been following the media this week, or perhaps you take an interest in astronomy, you may well know that the solstice passed on Thursday night, the winter solstice, the longest night of the year, the shortest day. And that's our topic in this episode of The Good Life, with me, Noel Debien, here on ABC Radio. Midwinter, in both the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere, Christmas in the north, but in the middle of June here in the Southern Hemisphere, was to ancient human beings an incredibly important time, because it was the time when the sun began to emerge again, and our ancestors knew that the cycle of growth was going to restart again. Things which have been lost now to the Christian tradition largely have re-emerged and are being remarked. You may not have been out on Thursday night doing stuff, but there were Australians who were. The 12-day festival of Yuletide was what it was called. Wiccans, modern pagans, take this very seriously. And there were Australians out on Thursday night associated with their revival of Wiccan pagan thoughts and beliefs concerning the significance of the natural event of the solstice and what it means for the human person. Diana Allen owns a business in Newcastle in New South Wales called Sacred Elements. Diana Allen promotes Wiccan ideas, and she was the leader of a group in Newcastle this past week at rituals marking Yule.
For us, it's all about connecting with the earth, and that's something in this day and age with all our modern technologies and everything that on a daily basis a lot of people just forget to do. And unfortunately, without that earth, we just would not live. So it's about connecting with the earth in a way. Now, we reflect back to our ancestors. They relied on the earth to live. They couldn't go to the corner shop to buy their bread and milk and so forth. So at this time of the year, it was really, really harsh for them.
Because there's not much light, because it's cold, because it's winter. It's
because
not a harvest time.
No food. There's no food, exactly. And so what they would do through their harvest times is grow enough food to last them the winter. And they'd work very hard at harvesting and preserving all of their food as best they could. And come midwinter, at this point, it would be a time of celebration for them, because it would be, okay, this is the day, from this day forward, the days are going to get longer and the light is coming back and we can grow food again.
The coming of the light, that's an expression, I suppose, that the Torres Strait Islanders use for the coming of Christianity, but this is a different sense of the coming of the light. It's really the coming of the light.
It really is the coming of the light back to the earth so that they can grow food again. Their lives depended on it. And at this stage in their lives, what they would do for that celebration, they would all gather together with all the food that was going to go off, and they would have a big celebration. And after this time, a lot of the elderly within the clans, within the homes, would actually, if there was not going to be enough food to last them out the rest of the winter, the elderly would walk off out into the forest and die so that they weren't taking food from the young.
Is that druid practice we're talking about, Celtic practice?
Yes. If you go back to our ancients in the Northern Hemisphere, it will go through every culture. They all have a similar thread. And I guess for us in today's age, where we don't actually suffer that sort of thing, we don't have to live through that. For us, we reflect on what they did by looking at our own lives and what no longer serves us.
Okay, because I was going to ask you, given that we have farming practices
abundant
and food that's
food.
Here, and there's plenty of food, it's not as if we need to worry about the food cycle. Why is this remaining important to you? What is that? And you're about to say that it's about a spiritual significance rather than a physical.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So, and they used to do that back then too. So not only was it about their food, but they would reflect on that during their celebrations. You know, what didn't work last year? And probably for them it was mainly around food. What crops grew, what didn't, and what can we change? For us, it's what crops in our life have served us this year, and what do we need to change? What no longer serves our higher good going forward? For us as Wiccans, it keeps us very close to ourselves, and it keeps you focused on where you're going with your life, what you want to do with your life forward. It's all about creative visualization, really, and our athletes do it all the time, and I guess any person who is a successful person would do this sort of practice as just a matter of course. as Wiccans, we do it on a daily basis.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about the rituals in a minute, but I shouldn't forget to mention the word Yule or Yuletide. What's the background to that idea of Yule?
Well, Yule is the winter solstice, so I guess that's just another word. In the Northern Hemisphere, they have their Yule at Christmas time, what we call Christmas. For us Wiccans here in this country, in Australia, in the Southern Hemisphere, our Christmas is now. So it's our Yule.
So it's holly and it's Christmassy colours and stuff like that?
Yeah. So our altar is all red, white and green, and we just have to shop for our Christmas stuff at Christmas time for now.
Wiccan bargain time.
Yes, that's right.
You mentioned before the idea of, in pagan or ancient times, that people would be thinking about crops and making new decisions about things that didn't work. But in modern pagan times, you were talking about setting aside things that don't help us. Can you give me some examples of the sorts of things that might be put aside by a Wiccan to say that this is Yuletide, I want to refresh, these are the decisions I'm making or the changes I want to make?
I guess it depends on the individual. So everybody's going to be different, what's working in your life and what's not. For myself, this Yule, it's been a big reflection on just letting go of everything that hasn't served me in my path. And my path this year has been my business. So I've been doing a business course and studying and things like that. So for me, there was a lot of stuff I had to let go of that no longer served the way I should run my business. Old things that I had learnt many years ago that no longer work in today's markets. And I only just graduated 2 days ago too, so it was really good timing for me, my graduation from doing my business course. On Thursday night at our ritual at Yule, I really brought in what is going to serve me, the ideas and the tools that I need to implement going forward this next year in my business. The ideas and the ability to implement everything that I've just learnt.
So for you it was quite practical. Now you mentioned a ritual.
Yeah.
Now what happened on Thursday night? What did you do?
Within our ritual we cast circle. So that's creating sacred space. And we all gather. We have a Christmas tree. And it'll always be different for everybody's ritual. It depends on how you set it up. But for us, it was all about getting rid of the old, bringing in the new. So we had a Christmas tree on our altar, and we have our red, white and green candles and our Yule log and all of that. And when we call in deity and call in the elements to protect us, we light the candles on the Yule log.
Mm-hmm.
We then each sit around and reflect on what it is and meditate on what it is that we want to bring in.
So is it a free form sort of ritual in that sense that, you know, you speak freely? Is that how it works?
Yes. Each person is individual. They will do what they want within that space. So it's just a matter of reflecting time now, taking the time individually to work out what you want and then writing it on a bit of paper. This is one way of doing it, and then hanging it on our Yule tree.
Okay.
And then we raise energy by chanting or singing or dancing.
Raise energy. Now, whenever I hear that, I always think New Age straight away, but what do you mean by raise energy?
How do you explain raising energy? I guess, you know, when you go to a party and everybody's dancing and having a great time and you walk in and it feels wonderful?
So it's like
they're raising
engagement.
Yeah.
It's emotional as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's energy raise. And you walk in and you'll feel, wow, it feels wonderful in here and everybody's, you know, happy and energetic and that sort of thing. So that's raising energy. And that's what we do. And we focus that energy into the tree with all of our desires on it.
How many of you would there be, like in the Newcastle group that you run, how many would meet?
Generally, within our coven, there's 9.
Oh, you would use the word coven, so
yes.
That's also a white witchcraft term, isn't it?
I guess with witchcraft, to me, there's no colours.
Right.
Witchcraft, I mean, the craft, energy, it's all energy. There's no black or white. We can choose to do good with what we do or we can choose not to, and you don't have to be a witch to do that. That's just people in general.
So just for those who might not, well, I'm not certain myself, the distinction between Wicca and witchcraft for you, how do you make that distinction?
Some people will call themselves a witch, but they're not Wiccan. I'm a Wiccan, but I'm also a witch. As a Wiccan, that's more the religious side of the craft, if for want of a better term. Those who just practice the craft, they'll find they are quite religious also, but they don't really connect with the Wiccan philosophies.
Now, the craft, there's another technical term. When you use craft, what do you mean?
That's witchcraft.
That's witchcraft. That's yes. the doing of spells
the doing
or the...
doing of it, yeah, exactly. It's the craft.
Now, you mentioned also calling on the deity. Now, who were you calling on the deity, calling on God?
We see deity as an encumbrance of the one divine. So people say you've got so many different gods. Well, in reality, there's one deity, and we see that like a diamond, for instance. It's one diamond, but it's got many facets.
So you have a belief in one god or one deity?
Well, one deity, but we believe that that deity is made up of male and female, similar to the yin-yang symbol in the Chinese philosophies. And each of those facets has different energy. And so we name each of those different facets. So when you call on that name, you're calling on the energy of that particular aspect.
Now, it reminds me a little of the Hindu approach, actually, but what are some of the names you use? What are those names?
Very similar. Well, we call on with Yule, Hecate. So Hecate, H-E-C-A-T-E, or it can be spelled H-E-K-A-T-E. Mm-hmm. She is one of the crone goddesses, and with the earth in its slumber, it's about going into the earth and being wise and understanding and strength. So we call on her because she represents those aspects.
Now, the crone aspect, I think this is about the wisdom of woman or womanly
Absolutely.
Wisdom, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. So the wisdom of the earth, so going into the earth, because the earth in our world at this point over here in Australia is asleep at the moment. So it's gone into itself and it's going into the womb and the wisdom of the earth.
So that is the Wiccan religious side, which has a dimension to it, obviously, which is thought out and which is taught among you.
Yeah.
Your business, though, itself, is actually about promoting Wiccan ideas, isn't it? That's what it is.
Well, in a sense, yes, that's what it is. It's also a spiritual healing centre, so we have massage therapists, counsellors, astrologists. I myself am an energy healer and a hypnotherapist.
Right.
Teaching is my passion.
Well, in researching this, I saw that you were very concerned about propaganda, about Wiccan and witchcraft stuff, that you were concerned about wrong ideas, as you see them. What are some of those ideas that concern you?
The silliness that, you know, witches cast evil spells on people and they do all this evil things that they should be burnt at the stake. I mean, originally when all of that, back in the burning times, which is very sad in the 1700s, 1800s, these women were healers, they were midwives, and they were tortured and burnt for it. They were just our natural therapists of today. That's all they were. They were our original doctors. To me, looking back on the history, I think that is something that sits at my core, that women in general, and even today, women are not paid as much as men for the work they do. They're not given the same status that men are given. As far as I'm concerned, we are all human beings and we are all equal.
Now, this was part of your way into Wiccan belief, though, wasn't it? Because you have a Catholic background, don't you?
Very Catholic background, yes. That very much was the reason, I think, for my path away from the Catholic Church. And as a little girl, I was very religious and I read the Bible all the time and I was very connected with Jesus and with God and Mary and the whole thing, you know. I questioned a lot, though. One thing I couldn't understand is why I couldn't be an altar bearer. I would do a better job than the boys did.
Why you couldn't serve on the altar and why there weren't female priests and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly, you know, and I didn't understand it because in my own particular experience of life as a young person, the women in my life were more religious than the men. I didn't understand why we were treated like we didn't belong.
Now, how did you get connected to Wicca stuff?
As I got older, I actually stumbled across an article in a magazine. I can't even remember the magazine's name. I read a bit about it, and it was like I slipped into it like a glove, and I thought, that's me, that's how I live, that's what I do. So I started reading more and learning more, and it just engulfed me. It was coming home.
Now, some of the people you were reading, you've mentioned Gerald Gardner, Stacey yes. DeMarco. Tell us a little bit about those people who write in this area.
Gerald Gardner's the person, I guess, who started Wicca.
This is back in the 40s, modern Wicca.
Yes, yes. He's an amazing man, quite a strange man also, but amazing. And I guess moving on from that to our modern day now all the teachers, the wonderful teachers that we have out there within this vocation is just quite amazing.
I think you've mentioned Janet and Stuart Farrar, Cassandra Eason.
Yeah.
Scott Cunningham.
The Northern Hemisphere, all of them.
Yep.
We have a number of people here in Australia, and I guess one of my favourites is Stacey DeMarco.
Okay.
And she lives in Sydney, and she's an amazing woman who stands in who she is, and she's somebody that I admire deeply.
Now, how does this connect? So modern teachers like Stacey DeMarco, how does that connect to, you know, the really old forms of it? Is there a historical link, or did Gerald Gardner actually just try to put it all back together again from the pieces, as it were, in the 40s?
Yes, he tried to put it all back together again, and basically it started again anew. And look, there are some people out there that say that there is a lineage, a historical lineage, but most historical people have not been able to find complete proof of that. Thousands and thousands of women were burnt to death. The line was cut. Books, everything was burnt and destroyed. And what is still there will be sitting in the bottom of the Vatican somewhere in a vault.
You reckon it's waiting to be rediscovered?
Oh, look, I would love to get into the vaults of the Vatican.
Well, you know, I do remember from my theological college days reading a book called Malleus Maleficarum.
Malleus Maleficarum, yes. How horrific is that?
That was the, I think, the codex at the time of the Middle Ages on what constituted a witch and witchcraft.
Exactly. And in reading that, you've only got to read a short bit of it to discover that these two men were just absolutely mad. The things that they decided off their own back would be the reason why women should be tortured and burnt. And I guess the Malleus Maleficarum is one of the things that really put a fire in my belly and really made me stop and think, people need to learn about this in order for it to never happen again. And people forget so easy. To be taught that those people deserve to be tortured, most people don't even know that it ever happened. That has become one of my passions, is to teach.
Well, Diana Allen, thank you very much for taking time to be part of The Good Life.
Thank you very much.